You've dropped into Juice Box, feature on campus and community radio station CITR 101.9 on the FM dial, fresh and live in Lotusland of Vancouver, BC. Or maybe you're one of our online listeners at CITR.ca or checking out one of our podcasts at a later date from JuiceBoxRadio.com. Anyway, you came to share this hour with us, and we're glad to have you.
Right on, and we've taken a very long month away. Caroline and I are definitely ready to be back in Juice Box. Yes.
Definitely.
And thank you so much to all of our dedicated listeners that missed us so much, that they were emailing us like crazy. Where are you? Oh my God, where are you guys gone? We miss you. What's happening? So thank you so much. It's nice to know that we were missed. Tonight we have a very special show in store for you. Some amazing, insightful guests. Carolyn Allain, producer and director of a brand new CBC documentary, A Safer Sex Trade, of which the Canadian premiere aired just last night. Welcome, Carolyn.
Thank you.
And Vancouver Madame Scarlett Lake, profiled in A Safer Sex Trade as a key contributor to the documentary story. Welcome, Scarlett.
Hiya.
And you're back in Juice Box for, the third or fourth time. I don't know. We love having you on here, don't we?
I know. It's getting old.
It's getting old. So she's getting tired of it. We need to do new role plays for this woman. She just gets she gets bored easy. Like, I'm sure you'll understand.
Could you wear a new costume next time?
Yeah. Show more cleavage. So A Safer Sex Trade, just so our listeners who didn't manage to catch it last night, is a one-hour TV documentary that explores the world of prostitution in Vancouver through the eyes of three women who work at different levels of the sex trade. So it's kind of paradoxical, it's a surprising story, and it has unparalleled access, and it's put into sharp relief by the trial of, as we probably know in Vancouver, anyone who is in BC listening to this, Robert Willie Picton, who has been charged with the alleged murder of 26 women, most of whom have worked in the sex trade. So, production of A Safer Sex Trade with Carolyn, she'll be talking about that, was completed in November of 2006, and it was aired for the first time across Canada last night on CBC News World, The Lens. So we're very excited to have you both on. Thank you so much for being here tonight at 10 o'clock. I know it's a bit, especially if you were probably celebrating the world premiere of the documentary last night, as I would have been doing. So, yes. So it's, welcome.
My day is just starting, huh?
The madame, that was Scarlett. Yes, her day is just starting. It's a work time for them. We also have a couple of extra special men in the booth tonight who are not on the on the microphones, at the limited number of microphones tonight, but they may contribute a bit to the conversation. So,
we have them bound and gagged.
Welcome, guys. So, just so that listeners know, it's the Safer Sex Trade. Carolyn, can you tell us a little bit about this? It was co-written by one of the gentlemen in the booth as well, David Ray, who's here as well. Hi, David. No, we can't hear you. Hi, he's waving at us.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about this. About the
David was a co-writer and also a producer on the project. Safer Sex Trade explores the lives of three women who work in prostitution in Vancouver. The first is Jennifer Allen, who's a former survival sex trade worker who works on the downtown east side, feeding women through a food relief program called Jen's Kitchen. And we have another woman by the name of Simone, who's an independent escort who travels in Western Canada, and Madame Scarlett Lake, who's with us tonight. And we were privy to some of her life and how she does her business. And basically, the film contrasts the world of prostitution and on the street versus escort prostitution.
So what do you call escort prostitution? So just explain that a little bit more, so the listeners know what we're talking about.
Okay, so the film doesn't look at child exploitation, sex trafficking, or forced prostitution. It looks at choice prostitution. I contrast street-level work and choice escort work, meaning women who sell sex for money, not women who work in massage parlors or as exotic dancers or anything else like that.
Okay. So I think that the title is pretty straightforward, to say, for Sex Trade. And what you've described, I think, helps us kind of clarify a little bit about what it's about. But what made you decide to tell this story? What motivated you?
Well, I was working, doing some advocacy work with user groups on the downtown east side and across Canada on a film called Fix, the Story of an Addicted City, and I became aware of the drug problem on the downtown east side, and was basically exposed to survival sex trade work, and from there, of course, I was motivated by what was happening with alleged William Picton, and the missing women largely motivated my journey to explore the stigma in society on why we think these types of women are disposable, why we marginalize them.
Caroline, would you like to ask a few questions, Judy?
Actually, I wanted to ask in terms of with the survival sex workers, what would you describe as survival sex workers? You mentioned about being on the street. How else would you describe them, like, in terms of?
Well, I think being on the street is not entirely descriptive of what these women go through. From my understanding, survival sex trade is sex trade where there is no other option, mm-hmm. meaning these women are have nowhere else to turn. They've been abandoned by their family, or they have a serious drug addiction. We, in doing our research, discovered that, you know, the average drug habit on the downtown east side is $300 to $500 a day. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're looking on the downtown east side, the average trick is anywhere from $5 to $40, which is high track. If you do the math, I mean, these women are needing to put themselves seriously at risk to meet that kind of financial dependence per day.
Could I break in? Would that also Please. Include people who have, like, a mental health problem? People who have a mental health problem?
I don't know. Does it? Do you think?
Well, I think a lot of people are dope sick. And sometimes there is, you know, I'm not a psychologist or a doctor, but I do know that there's sometimes onset psychosis that is brought on from excessive drug use. So I'm sure...
Especially things like meth, for sure, or something like that, yeah. But meth isn't a very expensive drug, so that's probably not the most common one used down there. It's not a very expensive drug to be high on all day long, so...
Meth, actually, a lot of the street drugs are cut with crystal meth. Not all of them, but a lot of them are in this time. As well as that, I was going to say that in regards to a lot of the survival sex workers, in regards to your question, Scarlett, there are some that have fetal alcohol syndrome as well, and sometimes do fall into the cracks in terms of that. And yes, there are some sex workers that do have mental illness, as well as dealing with things like HIV, hepatitis C as well. Mm-hmm. And I believe the average that they actually start is 12 years old on BC, according to one of the studies. I think it was through SFU. I'll have to double check our notes on that, but... Yeah, it's pretty hardcore mm-hmm. in terms of that.
Well, most of the people on the downtown east side use every type of drug. They mm-hmm. don't just have one that they use every day. If, you know, they're probably smoking pot, they're probably using crystal meth, they're probably doing crack, mm-hmm. and anything else that comes their way, you know, alcohol. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, like, Scarlett, I wanted to ask you the same story. What motivated you to want this story to be told? Your story, and also being involved in this documentary and the story that it tells. You can answer that.
Well, I have many years in the sex trade, and I feel very good about what I do and how I do it and the people I meet and the ladies who work for me and how we operate. And I don't like the feeling that I'm being branded with the same points of view that survival sex trade workers are viewed.
This would be by choice, where your women were to make a choice to be in the trade as opposed to for survival. Is that
yeah,
correct?
But it's shocking how many people out there in this city or anywhere else have no idea that there's a lot of sex trade that exists beyond the street people. And we experienced that the other day when we were on another show, right? Where we said that 20% or less of the of the entire sex trade workers are the ones that are on the street. And
I'd say it's less than 20%.
Well, I thought so, more like 5 to 10%. And people were shocked by that. You know, they were kind of like, oh, my God, well, where are all these people? And we're going, well, there's massage parlors, mm-hmm. and there's escort services, and there's gentlemen's clubs, and there's this, that,
lap
and the other.
Dancers that turn tricks as well. And
yeah.
The ads in the back of the Georgia Strait.
Tons of ads in community papers. It's like a plethora, all shapes and sizes and colors and
loads of independence. I mean, I'm going, there's got to be one in every city, or one in every building in the mm-hmm. downtown West End, you know?
Yeah, it was important in the film to make that contrast. And I think, you know, people are so inundated with imagery of the woman on the corner when we're dealing with the issue of prostitution that mm-hmm. it's difficult for people to envision anything differently. So it's wonderful to work with people like Scarlett who are open and putting themselves on the front lines of the debate to try and, you know, help society evolve
and become more aware.
Well, yeah, just be more accepting of the present realities.
I mean, I figure I can afford to speak out, whereas a lot of people on the Lower East Side are never going to be in an activism position.
So this is what leads to the question that's been really burning for me, Scarlett. And I've known you for a number of years, and I believe you have had a lot of balls, a lot of courage.
Maybe they've rubbed off on me.
To going public. Yeah. Exactly, right?
Yes.
To going public. I mean, you're going public with your lifestyle, your work, your business, your story. I mean, you're like, there's high risk of what you've done here, and I just wanted to say thank you for mm-hmm. that. And I want to ask you, what
made you decide to tell your story?
Well, thanks for saying that. You're welcome. And I just feel like I need to do it. And that somebody has to, and I don't see anyone else, you know, being able to come forward or thinking that they ought to, so.
And speak for what? What is it that you've come forward to speak for and speak to?
Well, to illuminate the sex trade as being, you know, something that's been around always, will probably always be around, that there's nothing wrong with it, and that we might as well deal with it in an adult and humane fashion rather than trying to pretend we can stamp it out. I mean, how many thousands of times has that been tried over the last 1,000 years, you know?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And, I mean, now you hear about places in Europe and so on who set up great huge body houses just to deal with the guys at the soccer matches. Well, let's just get on with it, you know? It's just... Mm-hmm. It's just everyday life.
For me, I think, you know, and Caroline and I have had big debates about this because she actually works with women in the downtown East Side all the time in a Beauty Night Society and the work that she does there. And I personally have, I know a lot of upper class, or not upper class, sorry, that's the wrong word, but upper trade or whatever you call it, I don't know.
High track.
I would say that there's definitely a class system within sex trade, especially how society looks at the sex trade.
Mm-hmm. And I have women friends that are very successful at it, and they live in Bermuda half the time and in Whistler the other half and have a very fabulous lifestyle, and they really enjoy it, and they have nothing, there's nothing wrong with that. I know women that have independent businesses that have had, you know, been taking care of each other. They sort of have a community of women similar to the woman in your show, your documentary, Carolyn and David, Simone, the woman who was independent escort who worked away from whatever to whatever. I'm sorry. I saw the documentary. I promise I did. I saw it last night. But yes, so And they have developed a community center with each other. And there's really, and like you said, Scarlett, there's nothing wrong with this sort of, if it's a choice. But, you know, so I like the contrast idea, Carolyn, around, you know, the no choice kind of idea and the choice idea. But I think the fundamental thing that we're trying to get at here, and maybe you both can speak to this, is that it's time to start to protect these people, just like, because they're people, and just, you know, their career choice may not be something that some of the society agrees with, but that we need to protect them as workers, like all of us are protected as workers in our society. And that's kind of, is that sort of what you think you see for?
Well, I think you know, even with legislative change, well, it's such a complicated issue, mm-hmm. and it's so underground. I don't know if there's one answer. I think it's something that will evolve as it becomes more accepted in society, as our laws perhaps reform and are more reflective of present realities of our society. I don't know. It's many things I think need to happen. I think things need to happen with laws. I think things need to happen with social structure. Mm-hmm. I think, you know,
stigma.
For example, you know, if a woman comes forward and says that she works as an escort, that, and she's a single mother, that her child isn't taken away.
Right.
You know, just on so many levels, it's so nowhere right now.
Yeah.
That you know, we just have to start moving forward and, you know, growing as a.
On that note, I'd love to see childcare set up such that women who work in all kinds of different kinds of work that is out of the normal everyday hours, and that could be sex trade people or just shift workers of mm-hmm. all kinds, be able to take their child somewhere, whether it's for 2 hours or 6 hours or 10 hours, and work around whatever they have to do in life to bring in a living.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
So, yeah, no kidding. I have some mm-hmm. friends in shift work that actually, you know, drop their kids off at friends' houses for the night to sleep, and, you know, it's just crazy.
It keeps women in poverty when you don't have those kind of practices.
It's true. I know with Beauty Night, with some of my clients that are in the downtown east side who are in the trade who do have their children, I don't know what they do with their kids when
yeah, no kidding.
To be honest, and that's a really, really, really valid point.
Well, it's funny, when I think of survival sex work, it's not necessarily a sex issue. To me, it's more a poverty issue,
yes.
or a drug issue, or a Canadian class issue. I mean, it's so
power issue as well.
It's so mm-hmm. overrepresented with the Aboriginal community. I mean, I think the government is sending a clear message when, you know, just recently we had the report for the Standing Committee on Solicitation right. Reform that came out, buried in December before Christmas, and the recommendation. Apparently are very soft, and I think it's a clear message that we're sending to poor Canadian women that the government doesn't care. And it's speculated will cost over $100 million dollars. I mean,
yeah, that was just shocking to me when I saw mm-hmm. that. And I was just absolutely appalled. I thought, my Lord, what is going on
the
here?
$100
million dollars to prove a man who's so obviously guilty, and, you know, all the jurors for a year. And
I don't know if you want to say that.
Yeah, oh, really?
Can't say that.
It's alleged.
Why can't I say that?
No, there's a publicity ban.
That's a matter of opinion. We have a jury system.
It's
alleged.
Until proven
guilty. This is Julia's jury system, but anyway.
Welcome on the peepee, eh?
Ayatollah Julie strikes again.
Ayatollah, great. Making a great name for myself here. But I was so appalled. I just thought, you know, all the money pouring into that, and then mm-hmm. and we can't seem to find
the investigation mm-hmm. as well.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
Well, how much did this solicitation committee cost?
You know what? I don't know. I don't even know if they spent their entire budget. I have no idea.
I wanted to ask, so Scarlett, like kind of going on, you know, going public with your lifestyle, all these things, what kind of response have you gotten so far? Because I mean, as someone who cares about you personally, I'm worried, a little bit worried about you. After seeing the documentary last night, I thought, my God, you know, are you going to get arrested, evicted,
it's a hell of
harassed?
A thing,
like, what's
to
happen?
Suddenly be exposed from one end of the country to the other. It's a little bit unnerving, but I'm fairly confident that I'm doing the right thing and that I've thought it through. You never know if something unexpected is going to come up, but yes, I did have some grief from my landlord already, although some of my supporters have provided me with lawyers to deal with that.
So
we'll see what happens.
Well,
have you been getting a lot of response through the general public as well? Like just emails or like just what's been the general response?
Mostly it's been pretty positive. Friends and supporters who've called or emailed or just said, you know, saw it, liked it, thank you, good for you. And other people who I don't know who've emailed and said, I like what you're doing or I'd like to meet you or...
Nice.
I think this is really necessary, etc.
Great.
Yeah, it's great.
Have you had some bad response as well then, or not too much, not too harsh?
No.
Good.
That's good.
We've had both sides.
Yeah.
Tell us. You know, it seems a very typical anti-argument is there's no way women would choose to do this. Very, very standard response, if not supportive of, you know, moving forward with this. Yeah, it's interesting.
I think having sex for money is one of women's favorite fantasies, and I'm sure it's one of men's favorite fantasies, too. They would wish that
that
would happen.
I've played that one out myself. I've been dropped off on street corners and had them pay me hundreds of dollars to do things, for sure. Seems fun to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can get a couple $100, go shopping the next day, I'm all over it. Why not? Anyway, but this is not a story about Julia's fantasies being played out.
That'll be your Valentine's Day show.
Yeah, the next show. We promise you listeners it'll be all about Julia's fantasies. Anyway, all right. But
Julia did touch on earlier, we were talking about safety for some of the women, and I think, Scarlett, you provide a lot of safety for your girls. Could you elaborate just a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's hard to go into exactly what I've evolved over many years in the business, but it's, as I was saying on another show, it's like a system of checks and balances that makes sure that, you know, creeps don't get through your net. You know, you just kind of weed people out that aren't appropriate. And I think the more professional you get and the more in integrity you are yourself and the more you're operating professionally.
So do your girls
the less you get bad people.
So do your girls get the clients that you have coming to you, do you screen them carefully then? And
yeah, for many years now I've had a system of having a paid consultation with anyone new to my service. So we have a way of sort of meeting each other, checking each other out before we decide to get together.
Right.
Yeah. I don't always do that any longer, but I have, my instincts are really good and it's never a problem.
And have you had any bad date situations with your girls?
No.
Yeah, interesting. I think that's absolutely amazing.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and that's what we would hope would happen, which I think, for me, I see legalizing the sex trade as potentially providing that, with the body houses being regulated and the workers protected and, you know, health services available and, you know, the lack of stigmatization as it's a legal activity and no longer illegal, so, you know, people can start to raise their self-esteem about what they're doing for their business instead of feeling denigrated and all the rest of it. So I see all that benefit there.
As a businesswoman, you know, I feel like, hey, if I'm going to pay my taxes and I'm going to pay for a license and stuff like that, I shouldn't have to be afraid that somebody's going to bust me or out me or, you know, get rid of me somehow or something, you know? Like, it's all too vague and, you know, mm-hmm. what am I doing right? What am I doing wrong? It's like, let's make an even mm-hmm. playing field here.
Well, the laws are so archaic, and so many of them are just so twisted and strange that it's like, you know, you can do it, you just can't talk about it. It's okay mm-hmm. to exchange money for sex. You just can't talk about exchanging money for sex. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
And you can't really do it anywhere. Like, you can't really do it in an alley. You can't really do it in a car. You can't really do it in your own home. Where are you supposed to do it?
Yeah, hotels, I guess. Body houses, I don't know.
That's a really good question.
Yeah. Carolyn, one of the questions that's kind of eating at me as well is oh my God, just went out of my head. It's a good show. It's a good time for a break. Maybe we'll have a little break and Julia's can get wrapped around that. All right, so we're having a break, yes, and we'll be back. We welcome your calls during this time as well. Please call in at 604-822-2487. That is 604-UBC-CITR. Keep that dialogue to hear more from Carolyn Elaine, and who's the director and producer, co-producer of CBC's A Safer Sex Trade, and Scarlett Lake, Madame in Vancouver from Scarlett's House. You are in Juice Box, featured on CITR, Vancouver's 101.9 FM, and we'll be right back.
Juice Box is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listen to scratch up.
Welcome back. Some great engineering going on here. Yes, you are in Juicebox. Thanks for listening. Tonight we are talking to Carolyn Elaine, director and co-producer of A Safer Sex Trade documentary released at, on CBC worldwide or Canada-wide last night.
World premiere.
Not world premiere. I think that was in Whistler. But anyway, it's just come all across the country in the last 12 or 24 hours. And Scarlet Lake, Madame, featured in the documentary on sex trade workers. So let's continue with the interview, Caroline.
Okay. Well, we were starting to touch on before the break about legalizing prostitution, and we touched on the law, but some of our listeners may not know about what the current laws are. I'm going to start with Scarlett, and if you guys want to just jump in back and forth in terms of what the current laws are and what you'd like to see changed.
Well, first of all, prostitution is legal. However, the three laws that pertain to our area of interest here are that you're not allowed to solicit. I'm not exactly sure what that means.
I was
means
just going to ask that question.
It's kind of like, does that mean you can't advertise in newspapers? Obviously, everyone's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's meant to keep people from harassing people on the streets, but you know, that a lot of these laws were made up a long time ago when people were doing that sort of thing, and it's not really happening anymore. Then there's another one, you're unable to live off the avails of prostitution, which I think was meant originally to stop pimps from proliferating and grabbing all these women's money. And then the other one is operating a common body house, which I'm not sure why they
have. You don't have a common one, do you? It's much higher than common. Anyway,
thanks for that.
It is a bit of a body house that you do provide, is it not, in that kind of sense? Or,
well, I like to call what I do an escort service, but yeah, sometimes we have to figure out a place other than an alley to do things.
Right.
I found it good to describe what Scarlet does as a boutique style escort agency.
Boutique style,
which I think her assistant Derek Andrews refers to in the film, and I felt that was very appropriate compared to, you know, other establishments. We obviously can't name any names here, but we all know what they are here in Vancouver. And you know, they're quite visible storefronts almost.
It's a very
different type of.
There's quite a few storefronts in Vancouver.
Yes, there are.
Yeah.
How come we can't mention them?
I don't understand. It's really hard for us to keep our mouths shut about.
Obviously.
That.
That's why we're on community radio.
Exactly.
We can say whatever we want.
Really.
As long as it's not denigrating or just racist or. Something. What's that? I heard some.
As long as it's legal.
Well, we're talking about some. Tonight here that might be questionable, Val. So, hopefully, Juicebox won't get fired.
I hope not.
We'll just have more time on our hands. Anyway,
exactly.
Okay.
I suppose we could stand on a street corner. Raise funding for our show.
I'd rather work with Scarlett. I think I'd be safer there.
Safer.
I think I'd feel. Anyway, okay. So we were talking about. So in the documentary, one of the things I really, really respected and noticed that was quite cool and interesting was that one of the women in the show was showing her safer sex practices, how she uses oral dams and describes them as quite silky and having a nice flavor and adding to pleasure, and which she was very true, and it is actually true out there in the world. Everyone can know that. Female condoms to protect more of her vulva, and then also, you know, obviously the male condoms and lots of lube there and everything for everyone's comfort and pleasure. And I thought that, I just thought that was great. I mean, rarely do you see in these kind of edgier documentaries or whatever, not that I thought it was edgy at all, but I think some people might consider it to be, do you see these safer sex things going on? So I really appreciated that not getting on the cutting room floor. And
yeah.
Thanks, Carolyn.
You're welcome.
And thanks for saying David.
That. I was motivated to put that in the film because in my research, so many people would say, you know, prostitutes are dirty. And I thought, how do you deal with that in a cinematic way? How do you break down that stereotype? And, you know, safety is, you know, at the forefront of what these women do every day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, someone with half a brain is doing that. I was also motivated with the Dental Dam mention because she talks about a client going down on her. And
yeah, that was
I thought
surprising.
That people might find that interesting because, mm-hmm. you know, maybe some people who marginalize this or stigmatize the sex trade might not think that a gentleman would want to go down on a prostitute. They don't really see it as an exchange. They mm-hmm. see it as the woman doing everything the man wants in that mm-hmm. moment.
Right.
Although I'm sure there are dates, you know, like that, but I maybe that's more fetish stuff. You know.
But still, I mean, I think that, and she was speaking about the fact that some of them are repeat clients, which mm-hmm. I'm sure, Scarlett, you have experience with that as well,
yeah.
that they start to have a relationship, and then, you know, and they have, of course, they want the person to experience pleasure, and the more a woman is enjoying the sexual experience, the more everyone's going to be enjoying the sexual experience. So, yeah, you put two and two together. So I agree with you, Carol. I think that's really was telling, and there was a few times that I piqued my interest in the documentary because pretty much I've seen and heard so much of it out there in my life. But that was one that really piqued my interest. And
I find that mm-hmm. men, by the way, as they get a little more mature, are less dick-oriented and more pussy-oriented. So they like to get to the, you know, seeing what kind of a reaction or an orgasm they can produce. And that gives them a really good feeling about the exchange. It's not just mm-hmm. all about get me off. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a young man's kind of thing.
Right.
You know, a guy
nice.
Who gets to a certain age, he wants to
hope anyway.
He wants to give her pleasure and feel like, hey, I did that, you know?
I'm going to have to start dating older men.
Yeah.
The men in the booth right now are both putting their finger slips going, am I supposed to be about that now? No. I'm sure they're thinking, I was like that since I was really young. I was all about the pussy. Anyway. Okay, so the other thing I really wanted to ask Scarlett was in the documentary, you went to see your family, which I thought was very interesting. Carolyn, if you can respond to this as well. And you mentioned at the birthday dinner of your father that the men in your family are more accepting of your career choice than the women. Can you speak to that at all?
It was my birthday.
Oh, sorry, sweetheart. I thought it was your dad celebrating.
And my brothers.
Are you guys
yeah.
twins or something?
Huh?
Are you twins?
Well, no, but okay. We're only 2 days apart.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so there must have been a few years in there, too.
I was going to say.
Be uncomfortable for my mom.
Yes, that would have been.
Okay, so.
Well, she only had sex twice a year, and that was the time she got pregnant. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know her.
Where were we?
Okay, yes. Yeah, so basically I wanted to know, you know, what you said that the men in your family are more accepting of your career choice than the women in your family.
Yeah,
so
I think they've
that,
been generally sort of, I think they've sort of been semi-amused and indulgent about the whole thing. They kind of like the idea that there's a colorful character in the family, and I don't think they have any moral issues with it all.
Why do you think that is? Is that a gender thing or a societal thing?
Well,
or?
They're not. We have a fairly open-minded family anyway, and we're not. We don't have a lot of traditional religious beliefs getting in the way, and I don't think my dad thinks of himself as a super traditional dad who has to sort of be, you know, the patriarch and say, oh, you shouldn't be doing this and you should be doing that. He's always been a bit more of a friendly dad than a, you know.
Right, and your mother, do you have a sister at all?
Yeah, I have two sisters.
Two sisters, were they there at all, or...?
Not at the birthday, no.
Okay.
They live here in Vancouver,
okay.
And, yeah, I've gotten mixed, you know, mm-hmm. kind of responses from them. It's not like they totally judge me, but they feel a bit uncomfortable about how can they introduce me to their friends or to potential boyfriends, and how are they going to deal with that? You know, like, what do they tell the guy, and what's his reaction going to be? And so they're a bit more worried about what other people think.
Mm. How do you find other women react when they find out what you do? Like, if they're not in the trade, like, do you find that women tend to be more morally judgmental as opposed to men, or do you find it's kind of like 50-50, where it's kind of balanced in between?
Well, sometimes if I'm just sitting at a bar and get talking with somebody, and could be male, could be female, but sometimes the woman turns out to be, oh, well, I used to do that, or I have friends who do it, or I'm cool with that, I do something that kind of relates to it. Other times, you know, probably when you're meeting somebody in a bar, they're not like a Bible thumper or something like that, but you never know.
You never know.
And I try not to disguise what I do any longer. I'm much more interested in just being open about it. And if I think a lot of women who do lead otherwise fairly straight or conventional lives, or are married women or whatever, often are very surprised to find that they like me and they get along with me and that they admire me, or, you know, that I have a sense of humor, etc. So it's all good that they know who I am and what I do, and equate that with, okay, this is a real person and this is a real part of life, and it's
right.
Okay.
Right. What made you, was there a certain incident or anything that made you just to evolve where you felt more comfortable being who you are and not hiding?
I think it's just a function of time, you know, over so many years of doing the same kind of work and feeling better and better about it all the time, you're less and less inclined to have a double life. And it's just there's a strain in having a double life, pretending to half your friends that you're doing something else, you know. There's no time in my life for that anymore.
Understood. I've got a few friends who are dancers who do hide from their families about that.
And I think that that's part of what this documentary could potentially start to break down in society, Carolyn, in what the work that you're doing here, and David, I'm sorry to realize, I really want to include you, you're both involved in this film. And that is that, you know, if we start to sort of take the stigmatism away from what I think a lot of people in the world are involved in doing, have friends that do, enjoy, whatever the case may be, celebrate, so maybe you can speak to that.
I think if we, you know, if we can achieve a certain level of, if we can norm... what am I looking to say? I think if we have understand standards, what is appropriate, what is safe. I mean, I think then we move the issue forward. I mean, if, for example, a client understands that by paying the actual woman versus some guy watching the door, I mean, might be a different type of situation, you know, where the woman might not be completely in charge of the choice she's making at that point. I think, you know, if people, I think information is power, and if people are more informed about this very secretive world, then we have a chance of, you know, encouraging people to be themselves and not to live underground.
Yeah, I agree. So what was the scene at Scarlett's family about for you, Carolyn? Did you put that into the film?
Well, it was a very important scene because Scarlett's accepted and loved by her family, and she comes from a good family. And that scene, I think, works on so many levels. For one, the fact that she is loved and they know what she does means that this is possible. And the fact that the father and the brother are accepting and actually supportive of what she does validates her, and meaning that she, you know, they've known what she's been doing for years. They accept it. And that's very important.
Yeah, totally.
Also to show she doesn't come from a dysfunctional family. It's a very common theme. People believe that, you know, if
sex
you go
worker.
Into the sex yeah. work, sex work, you've been abused or you're crazy or, you know, something.
This really crazy
wrong.
Family. There were all this shit
yeah.
went down and things went to hell. Yeah.
I don't think my family is not dysfunctional. I think almost everyone
I think all families
has
are
some.
Dysfunctional,
you know, but to be open about who you are and what you're about helps to heal that whole situation too.
Yeah, exactly. Can I ask a question? I was thinking it's a bit dodgy question, but you can feel free to pass. You were looking through pictures of your young lives together in the documentary, and you said something like, "This was one of me, and I was so cute and pretty and whatever." When you were a very cute little girl, before you got at me, or before you had a chance to get at me, or something to your brother, to that effect. And I was like,
I don't believe so.
I was like, What did you mean by that? I just sort of heard that.
Here I am looking adorable.
I
remember
this
saying
before
that.
You got at me or something.
I don't remember that at all.
Before Carolyn, do you remember?
Chance, before you got a chance.
Yeah. Before you got.
So
oh,
this is me.
Goodness.
I look
okay.
I was adorable first.
Okay. I was really. So you're, he's younger than you then? Oh, I
yeah.
see.
Oh,
I see.
Oh, okay.
You didn't want to admit that.
I wasn't following that at all.
You didn't
okay.
want to admit that. Okay, that's fine. No, I was just curious because when I heard that, there was three people in the room at the time. And we're all kind of looking at each other going, what did she just say? What does that mean? So thank you for clearing that up, everyone. Right. Caroline, I'm sure you have more questions.
I do have more questions. One of the things I wanted to ask is, what do you see happening beside? I think it's awesome that you guys both did this. This is really wonderful. Well, everybody here.
Thank you.
And
hey, guys.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think it's really great. But one of the things is getting people to be more open about who they are. I think that's so important. What else do you see possible? What types of changes do you hope to see with this film as people become more aware? Both of you.
I wouldn't mind seeing a red light district.
How would you describe that? Like, paint me a picture.
I haven't actually been to a red light district anywhere, but I wouldn't mind checking one out. But I'm warming up to the whole idea that it might be a kind of a tourist draw or something like that. I don't like the idea of it being a ghetto and that if you're in the industry, you have to be in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that makes no sense if you, say, had it in Gastown and somebody wants to get laid in Surrey. That doesn't make any sense, you know.
Yes.
So, but I think that it could be something that more normalizes the industry, too, if it's somewhere where everybody could go mm-hmm. see what's going on. I don't really like the concept of women sort of exposing themselves in windows necessarily
mm-hmm.
In the Amsterdam model. But just knowing that there is this area that is sort of created for adult activities that also has, you know, shops that for adult toys mm-hmm.
And like
things
the movie,
like that.
The movie theaters and all those kind of things
exactly.
are there as well.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I have mixed reviews about it myself. I'd be just concerned about, you know, how it might get seedy and how it doesn't support sort of community and families necessarily because of the people sort of traffic going through there and all that kind of stuff and the side streets and I don't know.
How can
it's
you? You're saying that in terms of that it could, like, how do you see that fitting in?
Well, I mean, you could have, like you said, you know, a daycare somewhere
that's
there.
True.
You know, you could have community center there. You could have all kinds of supportive activities. I mean, women who are in this business need to do things like work out. They need to go to the hairdresser. They need to go shopping. They need to go get
groceries. Massage, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The whole works,
yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to just have it all, like, about, you know.
About the train.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you see that would affect women who are in survival sex? Like some of the ones that are down there right now in the downtown east side. Because I think it's really good for, like, when it's high-end, I think it's good for, like, just in terms of keeping people safe. Julie and I were talking about this earlier in regards to things like just keeping everybody healthy, just safer, keeping bad dates away, that sort of thing. But how does it affect with the women here? Or would it be a transition period where those women would fall through the cracks? Or how do you see that, both of you?
I think I think people, there will always be people who fall through the cracks. I think it's inevitable, and I think that's where we rely on our social programs to pick up the pieces. I think it's, I think any movement, it's from the people. It's one person at a time, and I don't think there is a formula. Mm-hmm. I think it's, I think the best shot we have at it is by learning, you know, encouraging people to reach into their hearts and become more empathetic and mm-hmm. and tolerant mm-hmm. on all levels.
Can I break in just quickly?
Of course.
I just want to hear from the guys just in the last few minutes, if we can. I think we have a male perspective. It's quite a rare thing around prostitution specifically. So, guys, if you don't mind just giving us a few words, something that's been burning on your mind tonight as you've been sitting in the booth listening to us talking, and just maybe what you might like to contribute to the conversation tonight.
What do you want to know?
Thanks, Derek. Hi. Derek was actually in the film. He's a movie star in the documentary. And David Ray is co-producer of the documentary we're talking about tonight. Just anything that's been kind of burning that you've been wanting to say.
Well, it's good to be here, and I think that's kind of the whole point making the film, is to encourage a dialogue and to speak of it. I was inspired to get involved with this project because, you know, whether or not, you know, if your mother or your sister or your daughter, whether or not you want them to work in the sex trade, whether or not you approve of it, they are. And it's just the question you have to ask yourself is...
All your family.
the possibilities are endless. And the only question you have to ask of yourself really is, do you want them to be safe or do you want to cut them off? And, you know, I think it's pretty obvious you want them to be safe. So that, to me, is the point of departure for making this film, just exploring that.
And trying to advocate for that, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you found even with a lot of the women who have disappeared on the Lower East Side, the trigger that they had disappeared was the fact that basically they stopped calling home. So
right.
At some point, you know, like you'd hear, oh, she called home every week, she called home every couple of weeks,
right. Mm-hmm.
this, and then all of a sudden she stopped, and then somebody knew something was wrong.
Right, so
if
the family
you completely
still...
remove that support, then she could be alive or dead, and you just don't know.
To me, it's really interesting, like a philosophical question. Women are allowed to have sex, so are they allowed to exchange money? Is money allowed to be exchanged when there's sex involved? And then things get really complex for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's essentially kind of a woman's right. You know, does a woman have the right, or a man for that matter, to exchange money
for sexual services?
For sexual services.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people have these images, and they see a woman on the street corner, and they go, "That's just intolerable."
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's not about sex really at all. It's probably about poverty. It's probably about addiction.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, it's loitering.
Yeah.
You know? There's so many other issues there, but fundamentally, philosophically, does a woman have the right, or a man, to have sex?
And make money off of it.
And make money.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, exactly.
I mean,
and
those
of course,
laws are so old.
You know? Exactly.
It's a moral thing.
I know, it's a total moral thing. That's obviously the big issue. It's like, I don't know, the religion's cracking down, the moral stuff.
And a lot of moral is good, you know, and to me moral is the value of human life and, you know, the sanctity of life. So
we've been talking about legalizing prostitution. Are we talking about just in Vancouver or BC, or are we talking all across Canada or the world? Or are we talking about here?
I think everybody needs to.
Yeah, I'd say it's.
Make it happen.
Yeah, I think it's women's rights.
Women's rights and
workers' rights.
Workers' rights
men's
as well as men's rights.
Yeah.
There's so much male prostitution. It's just.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we're not talking about slavery.
Vancouver.
You know, it's like
uh-huh.
That's a whole different thing. If someone's doing it against their will, that's there's law. There should be laws against that.
Yes,
right?
There should.
Yeah, that's moral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I personally think in terms of survival sex work, there should be different laws for that because, well, there's a lot where it's not by choice
exactly.
And it's by poverty in that. Whereas I think it's really cool what you do, Scarlett.
So. It was really.
Thank you. And I mean, the documentary is made in Vancouver and mm-hmm. centers around things here, but I think it travels, you know. at least.
Yeah, it's the same in other parts of Canada. It's the same in other parts of the world.
Well, let's just hope that the conversation that the documentary has started, for sure. It has started many conversations in many bedrooms and bars and everything else, that the work that you've begun to do here continues, and that we all hopefully will see the benefit of your good work. So
it's on again on Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on again Saturday night.
What time in Pacific Standard Time? On Friday?
Yeah.
Sorry, is it Friday?
Yeah. Okay, it's in here.
So thank you very much. If you're interested in seeing the film, there's a repeat screening Friday at...
midnight. I think it's midnight, because that's Eastern time, so midnight.
Midnight Pacific time.
Yeah.
And then we have on the Saturday, January 27th, at 7 p.m. Pacific time, 10 p.m. Pacific time, and 1 a.m. That's 7, 10, and 1 a.m.
And that's on
CBC?
Sunday.
News World.
On News World.
News World.
And that's on
CBC News World. Yeah. Sorry, January 27th.
That's a Saturday.
Hmm. Okay,
that's
awesome.
CBC News World.
It's a very, very good documentary. I was riveted.
Can I just say one
more
thing?
Of course.
Sorry. I was just saying, if people are looking for more information on the film, you feel free to go to our website at www.cheapanddirty.ca. That's cheapanddirty.ca.
Not com. That's a whole different film company.
Yeah, I see.
Oh, really? What is that? Just out of curiosity.
What do you figure?
A little bit of porn there? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, everyone, thank you so much for coming in this late.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Scarlett, for coming in again to Juice Box.
And thanks to the women. They're
thanks.
Very inspiring.
I'm at scarletshouse.com.
Yes, scarletshouse.com.
Ask me anything.
If you're looking, yes, ask her anything. If you've had questions tonight, listeners, that you're burning to ask Scarlett, scarletshouse.com, you can check it out with her. And yes, please.
If your crotch is burning, stay home.
If it hurts when you pee, don't call.
Okay. Go to your doctor.
Your
or you should listen to our show and you might find some information on that. But in the meantime, we'll be back next week with another original Juice Box. And please feel free to email us about your questions or issues about sexuality or relationships at julia@juiceboxradio.com. And stay tuned for Hans Kloss's Misery Hour next. And thanks for listening to us. And we'll be back again next week at the sexy hour
of 10 o'clock.
You too. Woo!
You just experienced Juice Box Radio, a show dedicated to developing your relational and individual sexual health, expressing diversity, celebrating queerness, and encouraging pleasure at all stages. Be sure to tune into Juice Box every Wednesday night at 10. In the meantime, you can check out juiceboxradio.com. Thanks for listening. I'm gonna go get some more.